Anyway, we're excited to have you all here. We have a really exciting set of panelists, and we're going to be talking about one of the big challenges in mobile advertising today. You know, you've got brands and advertisers that want to spend millions and millions of dollars, and you know, at times it's hard to spend that money. And we're going to talk about some of the challenges related to advertising within those applications tied to rich media, whether it's from a planning perspective, implementation perspective, or actually even a delivery perspective. To give you some quick background, we'll do introductions across the panelists. Why don't we go ahead and start at the end?
Great. Hi, my name's Seth. I work at Starcom, focusing on global strategy.
Hi, my name is Kamal Kaur. I'm from Radium One. We're a dynamic audience platform that allows brands to connect with their audiences both on mobile and display. Our background is primarily from the display side, where we look at the social activity as it is happening and we create audience segments. And we've been doing the same thing on mobile.
I am Irina Newman. I look after mobile marketing at Groupon, from engagement to user acquisition.
Hi, my name is Aaron. My name is Aaron Smith. I'm at Team Detroit, and I head up all the mobile and tablet strategy. Our primary client is Ford Motor Company.
And I'm Krishna Subramanian. I'm the CMO at Velti, a mobile marketing and advertising company. So to start off, why don't we do a quick overview of what sort of an evolution of what has happened in the mobile advertising space. We've had, you know, the static sort of text banner ads, gone to, you know, the animated GIFs, to HTML5 and rich media. Through that process, a lot of it has been tied to this whole notion of an SDK. So what is an SDK? Why do we even need it? And what does it enable, you know, you from a brand perspective to actually do?
Well, I think just from a general mobile advertising standpoint, the industry has moved from being focused on rich media because a brand or advertiser may not have had a robust experience on their mobile site. I think over the last couple of years, sites and apps have evolved to deliver more robust content. And then as we start to see how people use mobile and how it becomes a lot more snackable information, and as analytics get to be more sophisticated, I think we're moving back towards rich media because it is snackable information.
Yeah, I think the issue with the SDKs is there are so many SDKs, every single vendor, every single partner, and there is no standardization, which makes it very difficult for the advertisers, for the agencies, for the ad networks, for the rich media vendors, and the data, you know, vendors to be able to work together. So I think at the end of the day, we're going to have to start to see some standardization come to SDKs. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to see the double-digit billions that we want to be able to see in this platform.
But do we really need standardization? Why not jump behind one specific vendor? And
no, I mean, when I mean standardization, I don't mean, you know, have one vendor. I just feel that standardization in this space general, you know, all the developers should be able to have one set of standard principles, set of processes, so that everybody is able to work together through one SDK, you know, one set of APIs, whether it's going to be MRAD that's going to come and do that, or us as an industry to form together those processes or that standard process.
I actually would somewhat disagree on that. I think standards are great for scale, but they don't allow for quick innovation, which is smart marketers' competitive advantage. And so some of the standalone rich media companies like MediaLets, they allow for much more in-depth, sophisticated stuff that's where standards have not caught up with yet. So, for example, you know, integration with Cool Iris, which allows you to do a full 3D object rotation. Something like that is probably going to take quarters, if not a year, for IAB to standardize. And yet, if you're the brand that can utilize that you might be, you know, you might be better off looking into one-off integration with somebody like Media Lads.
Yeah, I think you need to. I mean, there's sort of a middle ground there too. It's like first we have to remove the complexity, right? Like, so we can do this efficiently, so we can plan, so we can implement, so we can optimize. But we still have to be able to do things that are really unique and push innovation forward, because no one wants to, I mean, we're reaching that saturation point where people are, you know, can be bored no matter how innovative a rich media unit is. But we still need things that are cool and that are very engaging. And I think then we go back to, well, what's the campaign objective to begin with, right? Is it scale? Is it reach? Or is it engagement and PR and buzz kind of thing? So remove the complexity and just sort of plan strategically is where I sort of come out on this. But
yeah, I agree. It has to be a happy medium.
Yeah.
Because you still want to be able to break new ground with new technology, but when you're dealing with large budgets and small teams that are learning the space, it still has to be scalable.
Right. And so, what does it mean from a buy side or agency perspective when you have a certain amount of budget allocated and certain portion of that is going to go towards creative execution? If you're trying to buy an execution off of Media Lads, off of Cool Iris, off of iAd, you've got three different ad units there, and you can't even run it, on HTML5 without those SDKs. So how do you, from a buy-side perspective, decide how do I spend this money? What's going to be the most effective for those advertisers?
I think traditionally for brands, and I'm generalizing right now, so not necessarily speaking on behalf of Groupon, but brands typically are interested in reach an audience. And so let's say, for example, you're interested in reaching the Weather Channel's audience. The problem with iAd, for example, it's limited to one platform, which is iOS. And so that doesn't allow you to sort of reach your objectives. You have to be very specific and know ahead of time what is it that you're trying to do with the campaign and what will work best for your brand or for the objective of the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough, to sort of cover off on all the things you need to. I think every SDK or proprietary platform has its own drawbacks, right? I mean, iAd probably is up there, frankly. But you have to find that balance, and you have to plan accordingly, and you have to, when it comes to allocating budget, just focus on what's most important. I mean, maybe you can allocate a little bit to test something really innovative if you have that in the budget. Maybe you strategically decide, hey, we need to just go with reach and some things that will really perform well and get us eyeballs. But you have to really, really be cognizant of what you're doing up front so that you're not wasting time, resources, and money at the end of the day. And I know that's sort of a cookie-cutter response, but it's really the truth. I mean, you have to be very cognizant of what your goals are and commit to them and plan accordingly.
Yeah, I think the evolution of measurement and being stable with how everything is performing, and we're still just scratching the surface of having confident mobile ROI through to whatever KPI you may have as a brand. And as we become, and the tools get smarter, as the vendors start to integrate into some of the larger analytics tools, as we become more sophisticated on the back end, eventually we'll get to that point, just like we do on banner advertising, of true ROI investment.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and I think that's where Rich Media Space is moving towards, sort of deep integration between advertiser, or let's say publisher, and the vendor. Because it varies so much on a case-by-case basis. So those of you, for example, that use the Daily app, right, a lot of users download the content and then read it offline. So right now there's no reach media technology that allows you to serve and measure ads offline except Media Lads, right? And if this is the business that you're trying to monetize, let's say you have a content website where a majority of users are using your content offline, then Media Lads would probably be the optimal solution for you. It was just one of the examples where we have to be very specific in understanding the behavior of your users, the consumption of the content, and the business model.
Yeah. I mean, just to, I mean, I'm a big fan of their product, and it is a great solution. But I think that then there is this, what you were talking about earlier. I mean, there's the resource standpoint, the fact that teams have to learn, publishers have to learn, they have to, you know, it's a big resource drain if it's not a long-term commitment to that, you know, SDK, or at least a medium-term commitment to it. But again, I think it's goals-driven, right? If you want a fantastic unit, pay the piper and go with someone who will deliver that, you know?
Yeah, I think at the moment, the scale and complexity of each of the rich media vendor really matters, and that is really going to be the deciding factor for any brand right now. I mean, we all love to be able to do everything that has the highest engagement, but at the end of the day, ask a media planner or media buyer, they're going to go with the one that is the easiest to use. So given the complexities of the mobile platform, I feel that any provider, any vendor that is able to give you the reach as well as make it very easy for you to use them is going to win the buy.
So outside of reach and ease of use and engagement, I mean, are there any metrics that brands are looking for when they run a rich media campaign? Is it still too early? Are they just looking for, you know, the oohs and ahs, or are they actually looking for, you know, are they still trying to drive brand equity and drive conversions, or do they sort of go to the standard banner units for that, drive users to the app store? What are some of the goals and metrics that, you know, you can get beyond awareness from rich media, or are we just not there yet today?
I mean, I can speak from the advertiser point of view, right? So Groupon is traditionally a very performance-based advertiser, which means we don't focus that much on spending marketing dollars and promoting the brand, but rather on driving high-quality users that engage and spend and buy Groupon. But for us, there's been a shift from sort of pure acquisition approach where we focused on standard display banners, you know, 300 by 50, into now figuring out engagement. And we're now looking at reach media as a vehicle to deliver that. And the hypothesis is the more engaged you are in the reach media unit, the more engaged you're going to be in the app. And we're absolutely measuring that, right? So, and the metrics are sort of the same, right? What we care about is, again, acquiring or engaging that high-quality user. So, many of you have Groupon app on your phones, or maybe you receive daily email. So our job now with advertising, including reach media, is how do we get those offers in front of you daily and bring you back in the app, or bring you back on the mobile website and so forth. And the other thing, there's some cool things with reach media where you can skip a couple steps in the conversion funnel in the reach media unit. So that's the other thing that we're looking at to explore.
I think that reach media is just one tool. I mean, when we talk about the entire landscape of how you position your brand, and then how you move people through the purchase funnel, and then how you measure that. Rich media is just one of many, many levers that you pull, and each lever has a strength and a weakness, and if you can measure accordingly, and if you're accurate with and you're consistent across your measurement and your execution, then your rich media is going to bubble up to the top, or it might fall to the bottom, depending on how well you execute. So I look at it as one tool within the toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's an element, there's lots we can do in a mobile rich ad. I think I saw one the other day where, now I feel like there's celebrities or talent, much like a TV spot, involved in the ad unit. So, you know, you can tilt, you can shake, you can use sight, sound, motion, and do all this really interesting stuff. But it's almost like, how do we continue pushing innovation while having the same conversation we're having here? Because even though we can utilize all of these great, you know, tools or technical functionalities, there's someone, you know, in another room here, probably with a great product, thinking about how we can just create an absolutely kick-ass mobile rich unit that we haven't even thought of yet. And that's what, like, I'm also looking forward to, is that innovation level getting there, so that the engagement becomes higher and we're really pushing the envelope and delivering something even, you know, bigger and better than we currently can even, you know, dream of. Mm-hmm. When it comes to engagement goals anyway, I think that would just be awesome when we continue to push that forward and do cool stuff.
Yeah, I think the rich media on mobile, even though mobile is a quite young platform, we see higher engagement on the users. And one of the advantages is that there's only one consumer behind that screen, unlike display, which is why we really needed to have RTB on display, because it is efficient way to source the data and to start sowing impressions or the banner ads to be able to gain the efficiency on the buy. Mobile, the advantage is you only have one user. You know, that user is not going to be sharing their phones on a routine basis. So the engagement with that user is much, much stronger. However, having said that, I think that we don't have a lot of the technical understanding to understand the data, to be able to use that data efficiently, and to continue to keep that user engaged. Yes, sure, Rich Media has definitely done a great job on this platform. Even on a CTR basis, you'll see night and day difference between display and mobile. But again, when it comes to the analytics, which is what majority of us who have been living and breathing in the display world do as our day job, this landscape is not there yet, and I think I would agree, you know, there is somebody on the other room that is looking and evolving, and this platform will continue to see major changes as the year progresses.
Yeah, I agree. On the one hand, you have one single user, like you said, but on the other, that one user is on, you know, seven different platforms and in hundreds of devices. And so for, you know, for us to figure out how to uniformly account for every single step and conversion and so forth, that's a big challenge. That's a new challenge that we're facing, you know, since online display. And, you know, there's a lot of smart people working on this and discussing this right now. And we're hoping to figure it out in the next couple of quarters.
Cool. So, I mean, how far are we from, you know, we talked about all the online data, the mobile data. You know, now you could start to say there's going to be connected TVs, and there's going to be, you know, so many, everyone's going to have more than one device, right? So all of a sudden, it, you know, it doesn't matter that this is Krishna on his cell phone, and this is Krishna on his PC, and this is Krishna on his tablet, right? You want to know this is Krishna regardless of what device you're on. How far away are we from being able to get that holistic view of an individual user, knowing who they are, you know, generally speaking, regardless of device? Is that something that we look at this year or next year, or what are people's thoughts?
I think one of the major challenges now, we live in this multiple code base world where everyone's building 16 different apps that are native, and then a couple of websites, and then a couple of mobile sites, and they're separate code bases. And it's hard to measure across your mobile site and your tablet experience and your website. As I think things like responsive design and unifying code base starts to evolve, I think it starts to pave the way for measurement across screen. And absolutely, I mean, there's the consistency factor and trying to learn how people are using different devices for different parts of your purchase cycle is key to what, you know, what we deliver in the messaging and the tailoring of content.
So it already exists within some closed ecosystem, let's say iOS, Google, right? So in theory, whether you're on your iPad, iPhone, or Apple TV, as long as you're logged on with the same user ID, you know, Apple should be able to retarget and know the information about you across the platforms. I think the bigger challenge is, how does an ad network, an exchange, right, when, you know, when we're thinking about reaching a user across platforms, how to make that work? So let's say, you know, you looked at a cupcake deal on Groupon on your desktop, for some reason closed out, weren't able to buy. How do I reach you on your mobile device while you're on the bus on your way to work with the same ad to remind you, hey, you were interested in that? And then, you know, maybe even beyond that. So I think that's the big idea in mobile.
Yeah, I think the natural progression for our landscape is to be able to bridge the mobile and display together. I feel that display has reached maturity. It has matured as much as it needed to. We have done a great job. The only evolution that we're going to see on the mobile side, sorry, the display side, is how we look at the data, how we segment it, how we use it on real time. But at the end of the day, the users are gravitating toward mobile. They're spending more and more time surfing on mobile, interacting with the brands, interacting with their daily life on the mobile devices. So it is a must for us to be able to crack the code so that we can track that user on both platforms and be able to serve that cupcake ad regardless of the device. And there are a number of companies that are doing that. You know, I mean, Facebook, Google, you know, just to name them a few. And then there are other startup innovative companies that are looking into bridging this gap, Radium One being one of them. We launched VME, a platform that allows us to understand the social activity, the social connections of the users on display, but then also give them the ability to log into an app and create that bridge. So to us, as an ad network, we're looking at it from a platform holistic perspective so that it is an audience that we are going after, not necessarily just serve an impression and that be it. So I truly believe that this is the year. I know we've been celebrating mobile, you know, the year of the mobile for the last several years, but given that we have seen the giants of our display world and the brands understanding that this is the environment where consumers are spending much of their time, I truly believe that in 2012 we're going to see a lot of innovation on this platform.
Right, and then also you're not that only limited to, you know, reaching users only on iPhone.
True,
like
true.
You said, if you're going after the Weather Channel users, you want to reach them on Android, iPhone, online, everywhere. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Sure.
Well, from an advertiser's standpoint, I mean, it's just a great experience to provide users, right? When we can tailor this messaging to different platforms, you know, day parting, behavioral, all the many different filters of targeting we can do, it's just such a better experience for the consumer to get. It generates so much more goodwill and good spirit when you're providing them with an experience that's like really, really relevant versus one that's just, you know, up against the wall. So from a tracking and targeting standpoint, can't wait for 2012 to happen.
You know, I agree. When it comes down to targeting and the data point that actually goes into your planning and buying, there, when you think about where we are now, we're still, you know, scratching the surface of the sophistication of how detailed we can get with our buying and planning. But I'd compare it to, you know, the internet, your web planning back in the early 2000s, where it was on a CPM basis and it was demographic. And here we are now with, you know, challenges with behavioral targeting and geo-targeting, and you have in-app notifications that are geolocated. And as we start bringing web sophistication and filters down to the mobile device, and that's when we start being very intrusive.
And I think I just wanted to add, the beautiful thing is it's happening all over the world too. It's not just confined to innovation in the U.S. It's really happening worldwide, so it's a benefit to everyone, you know?
Cool. So I'd say maybe, I think it's probably been about a year and a half or close to 2 years since iAd officially launched with Apple. And you know, with that, they brought the $1 million budget, and, you know, sort of first time, you know, sort of you awoken the brands to realize, hey, you could spend $1 million on mobile. Over the years, you know, things have changed quite a bit. You know, marketers started to realize, hey, I can go out and spend the same amount of money with other ad networks or other ways on mobile. It doesn't have to be just iAd, you know, for whatever reasons that they ran into. But, you know, with that, we've seen iAd drop its budgets, you know, from $1 million to $500,000 to, you know, very recently $100,000 per buy. They've also stopped double charging, right? I mean, who's the only person out there that's able to, you know, double charge on a click and a CPM and get away with it for that long, right? You know, you've got to justify that, the $1 million. But as they've, you know, removed that, how is that going to affect, you know, the industry itself? You know, does that mean iAd becomes more of a traditional ad network? Is rich media less of a focus? Or do people continue to spend, you know, the same amount of time building those creative executions to run only on iAd? You know, with that, it'd be great to know if anyone's actually made any iAd specific buys and worked with Apple as well.
Yeah, I'll go ahead.
No, in my experience, we have not. For the barriers to entry you mentioned so eloquently, I will stick up for IAD in two ways. And first, there's an inherent knowledge to their platform that working with them will grant you insights on. And then two, you know, because they know their platform best, they can do things. But for us, or from, in my experience, the barriers to entry were just simply too high. And I think that by sort of delaying their entry into the market, everyone else gained a competitive advantage. And that just gave the people a step up and a lot more experience to do cool, innovative stuff and win their own awards, gain their own insights, and really create great experiences for not only consumers, but brands and advertisers. So, anybody work with IAD?
Yeah, so... Yeah.
We've used IAD, and it was more back in the day, but when they were one of the only games in the system. But I think is when you think about how Android has just blown up and it's changed the way we do things, you can't limit yourself to one date to the dance, and especially when you think about some of the open source and the ways that we can tap into Android and some of the users, and there's even significant behavior differences between an Apple and an Android user where you get to that point where you can't throw all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I mean, Irina, you have a example, I'm guessing, from the advertising.
Yeah. I mean, you guys know that there was IAD for brands and IAD for developers. And what Kristen was talking about was IAD for brands at the million, it used to be $1 million minimum buy-in and et cetera. So we've used IAD for developers for a long time, pretty significant volumes as one of the channels to drive user acquisition. So one of the things that are great about IAD that no other ad unit allows you, especially for app downloads campaigns on iOS, is it launches the app downloads right from the click, right? So you basically bypass one of the steps in the funnel and increase conversions, greater ROI. The struggle that we've always had with IAD is complete lack of transparency, right? You don't know what sites, publishers, et cetera, anything in terms of where your ad is being served. But I would also say, I think in light of the drop in the price, I just think IAD realizes that they're missing out on a large financial opportunity. And to your point, you can argue, yes, IAD will let you in a couple secrets about rank in the app store, but the reality is companies like TabJoy and other incentivized companies, they kind of cracked that way ahead of IAD and mm-hmm. took a huge sort of financial piece off the table for IAD, right? When yeah. all advertisers, a lot of people in this room, us included, were using TabJoy and other incentivized downloads to drive rank and incremental organics. So I'd say, to me, it's a signal of one, maturity of IAD in terms of being able to bring more advertisers on their platform and support them. So more mature account management team and tools. But two, also realizing that to scale, you do need to kind of tap into the app distribution space in more depth.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that IADS has done a great job for the past year and a half, 2 years, to create that wow effect for the brands to understand what they can do on the mobile landscape. Sure, they went after the big kahunas, who were able to spend $1 million or so. And the fact that they've been dropping their rates from $1 million to $500,000 to $250,000 to now $100,000 only shows that there is maturity that is happening in this right. landscape. At the advertisers, the agency, the clients, at the end of the day, want some analytics, which they're used to getting from the display side, which is something that IADS is not able to bring to the table. So I feel that in order for them to continue to get any budget in the future, they will just have to show something that is different. Or they're going to have to become a line item at the end of the day, and I'm going to have to prove the efficiency as the other networks or the vendors on any of the media plans are able to provide.
Yeah. They just don't, it just doesn't check all the boxes. I mean, from an advertiser brand needs perspective, it just does not check all the boxes. And when you have other options that do, especially ones where let you whitelist, blacklist, you know, there's a million benefits to going with sort of, or exploring your options with others. And I just think that the drawbacks generally just outweigh the advantages, but definitely agree with these past 2 points.
And sometimes it's been like really shocking to even, you know, see that you know literally nothing about where you're driving the user from and how your bias is targeted, like nothing. Not a publisher, nothing at all. And you wonder why do advertisers still give their dollars to IAD, right? And so you wonder if it's, you know, pre-planned or just misunderstanding of psychology of the, you know, smart marketers.
Well, it's still, I mean, just to play devil's advocate, it is a very sexy unit, right? Or it's a sexy proposition. You know, when you buy an IAD, you're going to get industry press about it, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So whether or not the unit itself is anything more innovative than what you could do with another partner, you know, I don't see that.
So essentially, they've done a great job packaging their pitch. Yeah.
Totally.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree. There are things that other companies do better. For example, the waiting bar. You know, you have to sit and wait for IAD to load. With MediaLens, you don't. They pre-cache the ad unit, so you never have to sit through the bar.
Well, and I think the reporting thing, I mean, just back to that tracking and the targeting thing, the reporting aspect is, like, hugely important for folks in, you know, where I sit, and the lack of sort of transparency there is just sort of unacceptable.
Yeah, I think accountability is going to skyrocket in the next year, and as we get more sophisticated with tracking, yeah, your expectations go higher, and when with the lack of transparency with IAD, you're going to start going elsewhere, because yeah, you can't get as granular, and you may not be able to measure as deeply as what you're used to across other networks, other platforms. And if they don't change, then they may be falling off buys.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of tragic, but so many brand advertisers are still measuring the success of their campaign by click-through rates, and that's about the only thing that you can measure with IAD at this point.
Yep.
And so our hope, I think, all of us at this table, is we hope that the industry overall is going to move towards more sophisticated, real ROI metrics. Like, really, through this marketing dollar, how much money are you making for a business? Instead of fluffy eyeball metrics.
It's complicated, too, because we're for Ford Motor Company, we cannot sell vehicles online, right? And we can't sell them via m-commerce. So it's more about bringing the right person in, engaging with the right actions that we know move people through the funnel, and tagging and measuring through to a lead, through to generating some type of content that we can match through to sale. And we're finally at that point to be able to really hold a lot of our vendors and a lot of our networks and a lot of our partners to the grindstone to be more accountable. And I would imagine it'd probably be easier when you have more online transaction type brands that are a little bit easier to measure.
Right, but in theory, for you guys to drive somebody through a funnel online should be more or less similar to driving somebody through the funnel on mobile, but it's obviously not the case for so many brands.
Yep, the funnels are just different. They're just different points and different content points, but when you think about a lead or a quote or a dealer locator when you're shopping for a vehicle, they're all the same.
Cool. So before we shift directions a little bit, we'd love to hear, you know, if anyone has any questions here. There's a mic in the middle of the room. Please feel free to line up and ask away. This is your chance to get free advice and knowledge from experts that have, you know, spent endless hours working on things. One of the exciting things that we're, you know, well, I'll let you ask your question first before we jump in.
What do you guys find your brands want more, targeted mobile banners or rich media? What do they put value on, do you find opportunities to buy really targeted stuff based on geo? And have you used any networks? Three questions, I guess this is. any ad networks that does efficiently target by location?
Yeah, so for Groupon specifically, it depends on the kind of the goals of the channel. For our yield management product, Groupon Now, which offers deals that are live for a couple hours a day, that are hyper-local, let's say you're going out for lunch and you want to see where you can get, you know, 50% off a sandwich within the vicinity of a couple of miles. That's where you would use a Groupon Now. So for distributing those deals, we're relying heavily on buying Latitude Lawn into the inventory. And we've tested this extensively across most exchanges with the publicly available Lat Lawn inventory. And what we found is there's just simply not enough of it in the public, you know, in the public exchange, especially given, you know, that we have thousands of Now deals running every day. The density of the unique users around those merchants needs to be pretty high for a conversion to happen. And what we found when we ran tests with the publicly available Lat Lawn users is there probably would be a single-digit unique users around a certain merchant, not nearly enough to convert. And then we went and talked to publishers about sort of what's preventing them from opening up more inventory and sharing hyperlocal data. And there's just a ton of concern about privacy. So, you know, in theory, you could be on your New York Times app, go out for lunch, and you always go to the same, you know, Heidi's sandwich shop. If you see specifically dynamically created banner for that sandwich shop, you could be freaked out. So some of the publishers say, you know, our users will be freaked out and will feel like they're stalked.
I think I would be really happy if I saw that. Do you feel like the general public wants relevant stuff?
So there's a, exactly. So there's a, there's a tug of war between the relevance and the privacy. And we're, you know, the outcome of that effort was, you know, going out and starting to build our own private hyperlocal ad network where publishers, let's say, wouldn't give necessarily their inventory into open bidding, but would share it with Groupon. But it is, you know, it's going to be a continued effort because for, you know, for publishers, the risk of offending their users by maybe sharing their Lat Lawn is greater than, at this point, greater than much enhanced monetization of the inventory.
As far as what clients are looking for, whether it's more targeted or deeper, richer content, I think that it varies. I think what clients and brands are looking for is the sophistication to be able to tell what is the proper execution. And, you know, I'll go back to measurement and performance and analytics to be able to get to that point. But that as we evolve, that will be, you know, how can we bring more data into it too, other than your standard geo and demo and lifestyles type content will be is kind of where the magic lies.
I mean, the year of mobile may have happened, and spend levels are certainly increasing, and will soon skyrocket. We won't bore you with statistics, but I will say that there is still the education and sell-through part that you work on with a brand, where you have to really gauge your campaign objectives and your brand's readiness to invest heavily in mobile. And I think that is where you then see these different spend levels. But it's a little bit too general a question to say, you know, clients are all in one place for obvious reasons. I have the luxury of working on a global consumer electronics brand that very much understands the different I guess, benefits of each type of mobile media. And you know, that's great, but it's definitely dependent on each brand.
Yeah, I mean, it greatly varies on the client's objective. You know, rich media does offer you a lot of advantages, like has been mentioned on the platform. You know, if you're Ford or Mercedes and, you know, Volkswagen, no, you're not going to be able to sell a car with a click of a banner. But you can create an engagement with that user. You can create a creative which will allow them to experience the features of the car, or tilt the screen and they can test drive, you know, or get the feel for it. So those are the kind of things that, you know, rich media vendors should be looking at, the agency planners should be looking at when creating a rich media creative. And then after that execution strategy has been done, then you can figure out whether your client, you know, your buy is going to be more traditional standard banners versus rich media.
I think one thing to keep in mind also is that there's so much that needs to be done in perfecting the data that we're relying on, right? So when you do a zip code-based targeted campaign, maybe 40% will be actually in the zip code of what you targeted, and the rest is likely just to be attributed to other zip codes. And this is just a function of, you know, how we structure publishers reporting their users' zip codes. You know, maybe, you know, you're doing a media buy on Yahoo and you have your zip code that you entered when you were in college in a different state. Well, guess what? I'm still going to be targeting you like you're in, you know, in your college zip code. So these are the things that, you know, we have so much to figure out. And the same thing with demographic, et cetera. With phones, it's tricky, right? Because, you know, if it's a carrier data, then maybe it's your mom's phone plan, but it's the son's device. So if we think that it's the mom, you know, will be targeting the female campaign, where in reality it's the teenager. So all those things are fascinating, but there's a lot to be improved there.
Cool, go for it.
All right, Adam London from Turn. We're meeting my platform, and our biggest challenge is that pitch the agencies would love, the multi-channel targeting across your TV, like one campaign across mobile, video, display. There are some technologies that, like fingerprinting technologies. I'm wondering if Radium One has looked into it, Groupon, you guys have, you know, you're on two different platforms, like looking into connecting that and what your experience has been with that.
Sure. I mean, what we're trying to do, because we have done a phenomenal job, I like to, you know, pat myself on the back for the display side, a shameless pitch right there. But the issue is, we see, as all of you see, consumers are gravitating on the mobile devices. We need to be able to crack the code. So we have launched our owned and operated proprietary apps, PingMe being one that allows us to do a share graph on the mobile as we do it on the display. VME, as I talked about, that allows us to understand the social activity on both of the platforms. But at the end of the day, we're trying to do a proprietary ID on the user so that we can match when a user comes on display, when a user is on any of our mobile websites or apps, we're able to do a seamless match. So for the past several quarters, we've been providing this solution to the advertisers that are looking to target the audience seamlessly. And mobile is just an extension of our media buys at the moment. Issue is that there are a lot of complexities, as you all know. There's a rich media complexities. You know, the client that wants to run a rich media type of creative on display cannot do the same thing on mobile unless it's HTML5. There's also UDID issues and the data that we can gather. On Radium One, we're all about data. We look at the audience, not necessarily the site that that user happens to be going. So for us, it is important to be able to sync up the audiences, and technology is where we're focusing much of our attention for 2012.
Yeah, so I think the issue that you brought up is, in general, the issue of attribution and attributing a user to a specific device, and then over time, hopefully, across multiple devices. So, I mean, right now there's kind of three ways to do it that none of them is perfect. One is the kind of hard-coded ID on the device, right, whether it's UDID or potentially Mac ID. Second is the first-party cookie. And the third is what you mentioned, is the fingerprint. And the fingerprint technology, guys, basically, it's a probabilistic model that doesn't necessarily 100% knows that this is you and your device, but it basically figures, I know these 100 things about you based on where you travel daily, what apps you have on your device, your usage. And I think that, you know, with a 99% probability, or sorry, it's probably going to be lower than that, with a 90% probability that this is you. So, I mean, to answer your question, I think, you know, with the fingerprinting, we're looking into it. And I think this is going to take a whole industry to come together and sort of share opinion on that and show trust. The pain point is very clear. We need to figure out attribution. And the solutions are kind of on the table, but none of them is perfect. So I think, you know, Q2 and Q3, a lot of us will be having these discussions of what's the best foot forward there.
Then there's the old-fashioned way of ethnographic and behavioral research, too, that you put in the field. And, you know, we're a lot of brands and marketers are still relying on that, but it's, you know, only as good as the time stamp that you have it on.
Cool. So I'm going to change the last portion up a little bit just to get a little more interactive. I'll ask a series of questions. We'll do, you know, short answers, 1 to 2 words, all the way across, all the way across the panel. Hopefully it'll generate some additional ideas and hopefully gets more exciting as we go along. So you're managing the last $1 million for your brand or your client that you're trying to save. If you can pick one platform, what do you pick? Is it Google or iAd? Start at the end.
Sorry, I missed the first part. Spend or save?
Spend.
So Google.
Google.
iAd.
Google.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking about rich media. What's you can pick two sorts of executions, video or HTML5. And keep in mind it's going across, you know, tablets and mobile devices. What do you choose?
For my current client, video.
HTML5.
All right. So we're going. So since there's a lot of HTML5 on here, what do we, you know, where would you spend money? Would it be on in-app or would it be, you know, sort of mobile web? Where's the industry going in the next year?
Is this one word as well?
Sure. Do you use two?
Do not explain your answer.
I would take in-app.
Yeah. Mobile web. In-app for us.
Yeah. I'll take the easy way out and say a healthy mix. But if I had to choose one, browser-based.
Cool. So, you know, of course, we've talked about iAd and Google and things like that. If we have to pick a winner between two different people that aren't really playing too much in the mobile advertising right now, Facebook and Zynga, who sort of commands more dollars at the end of the year?
Advertising dollars?
Yeah, advertising dollars. On mobile.
Right now?
At the end of the year.
Facebook?
My guess would be Zynga right now.
I'd say Facebook, is especially how, as they figure out how to monetize everything they're doing on mobile, they've been taking forever to figure it out. I imagine that when they fine-tune it, it will be nice.
I think Facebook's challenge is same that Apple was facing prior to acquiring Quattro. Mm-hmm. You know, their bread and butter is not mobile, and that's not their core competency. They're not going to be able to move as fast as the ecosystem is moving without sort of absorbing some external knowledge. And so Zynga, on the other hand, has done very good job fostering the, you know, mobile media buying in-house, understanding, figuring out targeting and user acquisition across their properties and games, and doing it at low cost per downloads with high ROI. So just, you know, based on understanding of the space, sophistication, having real revenue dollars behind mobile dollar spend. I just think Zynga right now has a stronger potential.
That was more than two words.
No, I would add that there's something there, right? There's a familiar from, and again, I'm speaking from an agency standpoint. There's a level of current familiarity with Facebook, and there's the brand equity, the legacy, right? So if I had to pick from one of those two, that carries a lot of weight. The fact that they're familiar with advertising with Facebook, they're used to it as a line item. They may know Zynga, and I'm absolutely not knocking it from a logistical benefits or realistic benefit standpoint. It's just I feel like people would probably, if they had to choose, pick Facebook just from the brand equity and name standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think definitely Facebook, because Facebook, as we all know, is going to be unleashing 420 million users on the mobile web. They have known this for such a long time. Even last year, 40% of their traffic comes from mobile, and they were aware of it that, you know, to introduce advertising on such a small device, you have to put some thought behind it so you don't piss off your users. Even on the global scale, there are many users, as they come on to the mobile landscape, they're never going to log on to mobile. Display aspect of Facebook. They're only going to know Facebook through their mobile devices. So I feel if I have to pick one winner, even though I don't want them to figure it out, it would have to be Facebook.
We can also think about sort of the engagement with the product game versus engagement with the social networking, right? And users that keep coming back to play a game over and over and over again, and users that keep coming back to engage with a social networking site, there's a ton of equity there, right? Because if you have a highly addictive product, which, you know, we can argue that both are, the one that's more addictive will in theory drive higher engagement for some of the advertisers.
Go for it.
So we're talking about smartphones here today, most likely. So how do you guys see SMS playing a role in mobile campaigns, especially where we have that data, and that's more ubiquitous from an ad platform standpoint than anything on a smartphone, anything Facebook-wise? I mean, Facebook shared 420 million users, but half of those guys are still on feature phones. So where do you see that being added to the equation and mixing with in-app and mobile browsers?
So this is a good one, because there's some barriers there, and I also think with the evolution, I mean, again, advertising hat on right here, you're looking for goals that are a little bit different, right? And the experience that you can provide users is just a little bit more solid when it comes to rich, right? And I mean, I think generally speaking, the consumers we're targeting and going after to deliver our message, the experience is much more rich, excuse the pun, when we're dealing with an in-app messaging.
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely serves a purpose. It's just that is a follow-up marketing strategy. That is never going to be the first way that you engage with your consumers. So I think from that perspective, that definitely has an advantage, and Radium 1, we use that too as a supplement to reach those users, but it's not usually the first way for us to engage with that consumer. I'm sorry?
Yeah. You mean like with out of home in a country where penetration is extremely low?
Mobile speaking, 50% of folks in the United States have feature phones. You don't have the option to go in-app or mobile browser. Mm-hmm. So there's other communication channels with SMS. So what are like those integration points between the two, and then what if you don't have the option? Is SMS still
affordable? It comes down to SMS, again, being just a tool. But whenever you build a plan, it's this whole philosophy of build for your least common denominator, and that's your feature phone. And so, you know, we try to think about it as that's the first layer, you know, and then there's a clear communication path of how you're trying to move people through. You're not taking them to a mobile site via SMS. You want to instant click the call, right? But when you sniff out a feature phone, or even at the device level, you may want to drive them into the app store or content. So it all comes down to the tool and building a unique communication channel to that. And then we're also playing around with how that unique communication channel is within the purchase cycle, whether it's way up way upstream with from an awareness standpoint, or and or are they owners? You know, the SMS has been very successful with letting people know that it's time for their service and their oil change, and or their lease is up, and it's a loyalty play. So it's just, again, same, you know, tool and toolbox.
Yeah, I come, you know, I come from the premium SMS background, is where I started. And, you know, in 2006, when everybody was using Motorola Razors, and primarily the content was delivered through carrier on deck inventory, and then, you know, there was a premium SMS billing, all that great stuff. The second smartphones entered the ecosystem, all that basically shrunk, right? And I don't know, I mean, there's probably a good explanation, but US is just not engaged in SMS. We're not using, you know, short codes. We're not used to be driving on the highway, seeing the message saying, text this to this to get this. We just don't do that. I think in other countries it's different. But if you're seriously thinking about big big business and mobile, you know, in the U.S., unfortunately, SMS is not going to be a core vehicle. It will always be sort of, you know, send this, you know, enter your phone number to get a link to download your our app on your smartphone device. So that's.
Cool. So last question before we wrap up. I'm going to borrow this from one of the answers I saw Irina give on a panel in San Francisco. So who knows more about your device? Your mom? Who knows more about you, your mom or your phone?
Phone.
Phone, definitely. I don't want my mom to know anything more.
Yeah, the content for the question there was it was a privacy talk, and there were a couple of carriers on the panel saying that you know, your information is very private. Nobody knows about where you are, what you're searching for, what sites you're going to, what apps you're using, and how. But the reality is that, you know, and my view is there is no privacy anymore. You know, with this device, literally somebody knows exact the point of your home and your work and what time you go there and what time you come back and where you deviate from that route and, you know, what you buy, what you search for, all of that. And so that allows for pretty compelling targeting abilities. And to the earlier point, great relevancy potentially with targeting, but it also contradicts with so many privacy concerns.
You ruined it. I was going to say mom.
Great. Well, I think that's about it. So it'd be great if everyone could give the panelists a hand. And thank you for coming.